All right. Well, that was pretty good timing, right, as we were coming on the air. I've been waiting. Joe Newberry and I have been trying to work this out for a while, and I said, give me 5 minutes, and sure enough, the first song finishes, and my phone rings, and Joe Newberry. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing well. It's meant to be, Steve.
Well, good, good. Hey, listen, where are you now? You're in California?
I'm in Berkeley, California. I'm playing with Bruce Molsky and Ray Stefanini and Mike Compton. It's our band, the Jump Steady Boys, and we're playing the Berkeley Old Time Music Convention out here, and I'm standing on a front porch, actually in a pretty good rain.
Oh, well, let me just get out of the rain. Oh, actually, you're in a covered porch.
Well, you know, they say that a banjo player doesn't have sense enough to get out of the rain, but I have proved them wrong.
This is going to be fun. How much time you got? I know you're in between different things, and I appreciate you calling in. So,
ever how much you want. I'm good. I've got a pretty full battery on the phone, so we can yak as long as you'd like.
Great. Well, this is fun. And if you're just tuning in, this is Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass, and I've been wanting to hook up with Joe for a while, and I thought I ought to nail him down now because he's becoming like this is becoming like the Joe Newberry decade. He'll tell you he's humble old Joe Newberry, but he's kind of becoming Omni Joe. It's like you're on the West Coast, then you stop off at Prairie Home Companion. It's like they want you up there all the time. You're getting to be a really busy guy.
Well, I'm a really lucky guy, is what I am. I play with some of my heroes in a number of different bands, and the Prairie Home Companion is really fun, and the band is great. Garrison is he's kind. He likes my songs, and we have a good time singing together. So I'm a lucky guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've had good fortune with writing songs, and those Gibson brothers. Well, I'll tell you what, they really do the songwriter proud.
Well, let me ask you this: did you meet Molsky at Prairie Home Companion? I know he hangs out there a lot.
Bruce and I have been friends for a long time from the Fiddler's Convention scene.
Okay.
On the East Coast. I don't know, about 2 years ago, a friend of ours from Australia was wanted to put together a band, an American band, to bring to the National Folk Festival in Australia. And so he said, well, if you could put something together with Mike Compton, because, you know our duo, and I said, well, how about maybe we also get Bruce and Rafe? So that was how the Jump Steady Boys started. We just went, and then folks started wanting to hear us. So it's the first time I've ever had the chance to really be in a band with Bruce, and it's great. It's a lot of fun.
Well, he can. Well, you all seem to be, he plays a lot of different instruments, too.
He does, and is pretty high level on all of them. You know, if people love his fiddling, as you might expect, but you know, his guitar playing is also, he plays that unbelievable fingerpick style. Loves Joseph Spence, loves African guitar playing. He's wonderful.
Isn't that fun?
And of course, he's a great banjo player too.
Isn't that fun hanging around with guys like that?
Listen, I think any of the folks I play with,
sure.
If you strung a wire across the front porch, they'd make music with it. I mean,
well, I think we all know about Mike Compton. I mean, I think anybody that's trying to find a bluegrass radio station knows about Mike. He's just amazing, the work he just keeps putting out, and he's so versatile and does so many different things.
So many big band
names that he's been with, and in his own career now with you. I don't know the other name that you mentioned though, Joe. I'm embarrassed to say.
Rafe Stefanini. Rafe is an amazing fiddle player. He grew up in Bologna, Italy, and moved to the States probably 30 years ago, and decided that he was going to play the fiddle every day. And so for the last 30 years, he's played the fiddle a few hours every day at least, and he's one of the most accomplished interpreters of American fiddle music that I know. In fact, I bring Rafe, I run the Old Time Week at Augusta Heritage workshops in Elkins, West Virginia, and I the last 2 years I brought Rafe to teach beginning fiddle, because you know, one of the things when grown-ups start playing an instrument, they'll often say, no, it's not my, I didn't grow up with this, or I didn't do this, and I love having Rafe there, because I say, you know, here's a guy from Italy who has literally mastered the idiom, and it's very cool. So and Race also a powerhouse banjo player, guitar player. So we have a bunch of fun.
Well, when was it that you went to Australia? And I'll tell you why I ask you that in a second.
I went the first time in 2000 to play at the Harrietville Festival, which was at the top of a mountain in Victoria in the Australian version of the Blue Ridge, and then I went back with Jump Study Boys in spring of 2011.
Okay. There, I mean, this just occurred to me, well, it didn't just occur to me, but I found out for certain. I was talking to a woman, she goes by Nad, her name is Nadine Budge. They have a band there called the Stetson Family Band, and she was talking, as a matter of fact, her interview is going to play today in the last hour, but she was explaining to me how pervasive, how much bluegrass there is in Melbourne.
Listen, they love it. And I, part of the thing about playing the kind of music I play, and I play, so I'm becoming an old guy, and so I sort of play whatever I want.
Well, right.
Part of the thing about playing, well, we say country music.
Right, yes.
That there are country people everywhere. And so old-time music and bluegrass music really resonates with folks wherever we play. You know, it's heart-driven, and it's honest music, and it's pretty cool to see people react to what you do. And also, I got to say that the Australians, especially the instrument makers, are making some of the best instruments you can find anywhere.
Really?
Matter of fact, Compton plays a Duff mandolins and the Gilchrist mandolins.
Okay, well, that's a good endorsement.
Yeah, both of them are great Australian makers.
Yeah, you mentioned something about songwriting, and maybe this is going to. I hope that along the way, there's people recognizing. We're going to ask Joe just a bit about what some of his songwriting's been up to lately. But I hope along the way that they don't just see your name as a credit to all these songs that are now getting nominations. And you mentioned Eric Gibson and the Gibson Brothers, but you've always been writing songs. But what's happened lately? All of a sudden, you seem to be. Everywhere I look, there's a credit by Joe Newberry on some song that somebody can't wait to record.
Well, you know, every artist has the different stages of their career. The first stage is who's Joe Newberry. The second stage is get me Joe Newberry. The third stage is give me a young Joe Newberry. And the fourth stage is who's Joe Newberry. So, right now I'm sort of in between number two and number three. But I always have written songs, and I come from a family that we're sort of a poetry loving family, and so my first song, I was five, and I blatantly ripped off the Kingston Trio, and my first song I ever wrote was Hang Down Your Head, Bugs Bunny. And but you know, for five, it wasn't bad because the last verse is because he gets in trouble for stealing carrots. That's the whole thing of the song, and the last verse is Bugs Bunny's still a carrot lover. He loves him night and day. The only difference about Bugs is he's eating carrots at Heaven's Gate. And I thought for five that wasn't bad.
It's deep. It's at least deep. And you mean you're at 5 years old? You're dealing with a dead Bugs Bunny.
Well, yeah, life is real and life is earnest. So.
You know, if you'd have done that today, the Kingston Trio Inc., they would have been after you, some copyright issue.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. You know, I was five, so they probably wouldn't have put me in the shackles. But,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've always written songs, but they never, you know, they were just little nuggets that I would sing to myself, and then. I started in some of the bands I got into in the late 80s, early 90s. I started writing and bringing songs to the bands I was playing in. And then, I met Eric and Lee at a bluegrass camp, and we were just trading songs, and they started singing some of theirs, and I started singing some of mine, and we were off down the road. And they recorded, I think, four of mine, and then Eric and I, Eric very graciously gave me a co-write on They Call It Music, which is it's one of the songs that's up for an IBMA award.
Yeah, it's got, I think it's even nominated for an Oscar last time I looked. I mean, it's everywhere. Well, I mean, let me ask you this. And Eric's been on this show, and I like those guys a lot. I like the whole band. But are they really as nice as they appear, or is that just a front?
These are the boys that you would take home to your family to say, see, I can find nice friends. Parents would not look and give you the hairy eyeball if you brought the Gibson Brothers home. They'd say, oh, why don't you have more friends like these nice boys? Because they really are just as they're as solid and good a guys as you'll meet.
I'm kidding, of course, but they seem to be, and they just every time you meet them and talk to them, they love the music. It's their life, and obviously they're hanging around with guys like you, so they want to keep having that nice little open mind to all those great tunes you're coming up with. Because I think you're going to have more of them.
I'll tell you what, I'm so thrilled that they would want to record anything that I wrote, because they are such strong writers themselves. And so it's one of the things that they really do look for great songs wherever they can find them. And, you know, it's like one of the things they've done on the last couple of albums is they've written, they've recorded songs that they found on Mike Bubb's iPod. You know, they were wondering what Bubb was listening to. And it's like, they just were listening to stuff on his iPod, and it's like, oh, that's nice. And
well, there you go. I remember Bill Emerson back in the days when they would live in a car and jump out of a car and shave their face and go on stage. He would travel with some sort of a recorder. And Bill is actually the one that found that Manfred Mann song.
Really?
Yeah. He recorded. You know what I'm talking about? Well, shoot, no, I can't think of the name of it. Every bluegrass band tries to play it at some point. Like a Fox. Yeah. And he heard it, and he heard Manfred, the original version of Manfred Mann, and thought that could be a bluegrass. Bill Emerson's one of those guys that hears different tunes, and now it's a much bigger hit, probably longevity wise, maybe not dollar wise yet, but it exists in bluegrass lore, and it's an old rock and roll song that Bill heard in a car.
The first song of mine that the Gibsons recorded is a song called I Know Whose Tears. And actually, I Know Whose Tears, I was leafing through the book about the Carter family that came out a few years ago, and I came up in the back of the book was the poem that was read at Sarah Carter's funeral. And it was a three-line poem by Rudyard Kipling called Mother of Mine. And I read, if I were hanged on the highest hill, I know whose love would follow me still. If I were drowned in the sea, I know whose tears would come down to me. If I were damned, body and soul, I know whose prayers would make me whole. Mother of mine, mother of mine. And I read that, Steve, and I went, man, that could be a hillbilly song. And so I took three. I made up three other couplets. I did a chorus. Mother, my first companion. Mother, my truest friend. Mother, way up in heaven, we'll meet again. And it's hard to go wrong with a song about mother, really.
True.
Everybody's got one.
Well,
everybody's got one. But that was, the same sort of deal. It's like the music's all around. You just have to sort of grab it and shape it.
What is the, and I wanted to come back to this because you mentioned about poetry in your family. Tell me a little bit about that.
My grandfather was born in 1884, and he had one of those memories. By the time he was nine, he had memorized the Iliad and the Odyssey. And people would come out from Eureka Springs way out into the country to hear this little farm boy recite Homer.
You're kidding. It's like Fahrenheit 451. He was getting ready for Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, maybe so.
I am the Iliad walking around the woods lost somewhere.
That's it.
Wow, that's incredible.
And grandfather instilled a love of poetry in all of his children. And so we actually, the Newberry cousins of my generation, we started a Facebook. It's like a private Facebook page just for the family of Newberry poetry. And so it's very cool. We get on there. We share stuff. My cousin John passed away a long time ago. He was probably the best. He's probably the best wordsmith of any of us, and we have some of his poetry left. In fact, one of his poems, it starts out, I have sat with my father's rifle across my knees in the blue crepe tail of mourning. Mm. And so I, at some point, I'm going to try and turn that poem into a song. So, but, you know, we love the way words roll around in our mouth.
Now, when you're writing a song, do you start with a lyric first, or do you start with a melody, or is this kind of whatever?
The short answer is yes. I've written a lot of songs about heaven and folks I love being gone, yeah, but not gone.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, you just want to write a party song, and so I can sit down and write a party song. I wrote one that's on the Gibson Brothers new album called "The Darker the Night, the Better I See," and right. I wrote it sort of with Lee's voice in my head. I just there's that kind that you sort of craft, and I knew that the "Darker the Night, the Better I See" is an old fiddle tune title from Western North Carolina, and so I knew I wanted to write a song with that, and so I figured, well, I'd make it a little honky tonk song. I got those kind, but I'll have songs that drop down into my head that it's like I'm taking dictation.
Really?
And yeah, I was standing in line at the post office one Christmas to buy stamps for my Christmas cards, and the lyric, "Before you, blue was a color so splendid. I slept the night through, and blue was just something the wind did." Dropped into my head, and I thought, I better write that one down. So I chose somebody's Christmas card that hadn't been mailed yet and wrote that down on the back. And then I went home and wrote two other verses and had a song by the end of the day.
Now, let's say you're writing a poem or just whatever, you know, you're writing down, do you write things that aren't ever intended to be songs, or I mean, in other words, could we find a little notebook somewhere that Joe Newberry's been working on, just be like things that you wrote down or thoughts or things that maybe?
You could check in lots of different places for those things. You could check on my answering machine. Sometimes I'll write a song and sing it into my answering machine. You can check in the bottom of my guitar case. There's lots of songs that will never get out of my guitar case. sometimes, you know, I was working on a play and wrote a few years ago and wrote a bunch of songs in different genres because it fit the play. I like giving myself that challenge. I'd never written a lullaby. You know, I had sung lullabies to the kids, but I'd never written one. And so I wrote a lullaby, and I might do something with that, or I might not. I sing it to myself, and I sing it to the grandkids.
Huh. Wow. Do you think that things are kind of like gelling? Not that they weren't gelling before. I don't want to give the impression that there's Joe Newberry just kind of, you know, picking in the dark somewhere, but it seems to me there's a lot. Is it because of the songwriting recognition, maybe with the Gibson Brothers? It seems like you're getting really busy, pal.
I was talking with someone last night at the Freight and Salvage after the show, and we were actually talking about that. They said, "Man, I see you everywhere." And part of it, I think, and they said, "Is it the songwriting?" And I think so. I mean, I think I can sort of chart when I folks started getting my name started getting out there a little bit more, and then Prairie Home Companion has been, you know, a way that more folks have heard my stuff. I'm going back on October 5th, and I've been on Prairie Home with my band Big Medicine, and we love doing that. But Garrison likes my songs, and so I'll go back as long as they'll have me. I'll go back.
Is it as cool experience being on it as it is listening and thinking how cool it would be to be on there? I mean, it just seems like the most relaxed, neat, organic type of a production.
It is amazing to watch how the show is put together, and also about how Garrison works, because he's this island of calm in this sea of activity. You go in on Friday, you sort of run through the things that you're thinking about doing, but you know the show is very organic, and so sometimes it'll move or morph, or stuff gets moved around a little bit, and it's really cool to be part of that. And I'll tell you, the thing that really struck me the first time I did it just by myself is how honor that was to be with that many people that good at what they do. From the stage crew to the band to the staff that works with Garrison, to Garrison himself. It's just startling.
You know,
how good they are at what they do.
When you see one of the shows on TV whenever they would broadcast them, the crowd looks giddy.
It's because being at the show is a thing all in itself. You know, there's great music on the show. It's a great show. But people love to sort of be behind the scenes, and that's what it is. It's, you know how, like when you go to a fancy restaurant now, the kitchen is open and you see, how the cooks are doing it.
Yeah.
That's sort of how like it is. When with Prairie Home, because people can see how the chef is making the meal. It's fun.
Well, you've mentioned the Jump Steady Boys. You've mentioned Big Medicine.
Yes, sir.
And then you do projects all the time. Projects. I mean, you do albums. I hate that word. You do albums and recordings with Mike Compton just alone. Is that true?
We have a very, very fun duo, and we play, you know, a few times a year. Mike's busy. He's a busy man, and he's working a lot solo. He also still, of course, plays with Nashville Bluegrass Band, and he works with other folks. And he started a new band, called Hell and High Water with Shad Top, and David Greer, and Missy Raines.
Missy Raines, I saw that. Well, oh.
I'll tell you what, if you get the chance to hear Hell and High Water, man,
I got to see
great.
That. I saw that. I guess something popped on that on Facebook a couple of weeks ago, and I love all those people, and I just have a real special place in my heart for Missy and what she's been doing recently with, you know, she is
the metronome with soul.
Oh, yeah.
That's what she is.
She is, and she blushed. I couldn't see it, but I can tell in her voice she was on. Before the first album came close to being, the last album came close to being released with the new hip. Anything Missy wants to talk about, and I was comparing her to, you know, Christian McBride. I mean, in a jazz setting, I think is just a dominating bass player. She, no. I mean, but she could play with anybody anywhere, at any time.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's just remarkable.
Absolutely.
It's just remarkable stuff. Yeah. That's neat.
Playing with Compton is one of those things that the first time we played together, I was doing a show, and the guy I was playing with had to cancel, and so I called Mike up. We had never met in person, but I hired him later in the year to come work for me at Augusta to teach mandolin, and so, you know, I can do a solo show, I can do it fine, but I thought, you know, I'm going to call Compton and see if he'd do it, and he didn't have anything going on that weekend. And so we put together a couple of emails back and forth, and then got together and wrote down two sets about 30 minutes before we played. And like from the first couple of notes, we looked over at each other and went, well, okay. Okay, that seems to work pretty good. Hey, that one worked pretty good too. And so by the time we got done with the show, we thought, well, maybe we ought to do this again.
That's great. I mean, and right now I see most of the stuff. Of course, YouTube is everywhere, and I see you doing these things with Mike, and just real stripped down, just real. I mean, it's just acoustic. It's just right there, real simple, but not. I mean, you know, the I guess the setting as far as the production and whatnot, you might say is but it's not simple. I mean, anything Mike does or you do has got some thought and some real technique behind it, but it's just such great sounding, feeling music, you know?
Well, thank you. The thing about Mike that just knocks my hat in the creek is that he, for one, he's one of the best singers on the planet.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And his right hand is just an amazing thing all its own. And so, and he's done such a huge amount of study. But he's at the place where all players really want to be, which is he sounds, you know, he sounds like himself, and he plays and he plays full out.
And he's got that connection, Joe. That you know, he has everything available to him, all the ability and all of the whatever. So what he hears, he plays. And it could be a, you know, sometimes he does that real powerful, and then he can do the other. But it's almost now he's a direct channel. The music in his head has a direct channel to his instrument.
Yeah.
And that's
remarkable. Well, I'll tell you, we played the other night. We did a concert at Straight and Salvage here in Berkeley. And we did, I Know Who's Tears. I do it a different way than the Gibson Brothers. I do it a fingerpick version, and Mike was playing on it, and I just, at one point during his solo, I mean, it caught me unawares of how strong it was, and it's like, I'm thinking there as I'm playing, the rest of the break, it's like, okay, you better get it back together. Come on. Come on. But yeah, he's a great guy. But the thing is that we've been doing this a long time. Yeah. We ought to be getting on it pretty good.
Well, it is, and it's all great. It's great music, and it just seems like it seems like the two of you just seem to fit. And I'm looking at, and the reason I'm saying this, I'm looking at a photograph that I threw up on Facebook, and also, I try to advertise these appearances as much as I can.
Yeah.
And there, I have a cool photograph I stole from someone that's just you and Mike, and it's black and white. And
that's from Kalamazoo. We were playing up in Kalamazoo, we're just before the show, sitting there, our voices blend good. We have sort of a similar way of approaching stuff, and so.
Does he hate the fact that you have a better beard than him?
I kind of like his whiskers. They're very close and trim.
Oh man, you know what, Joe? I had a feeling. I knew I was gonna. Aside from your music, I knew what you were gonna be like. I knew this was gonna be fun. I know you got a lot of stuff going on, but I just think this is. I knew it. I even told people. I said, look, I'm gonna like Joe. You're gonna like hearing from Joe.
Oh, I appreciate it. I'm honored that you'd want to talk to me.
So. I'm thrilled to death that we could work it out, and I know that, of course, you're an East Coaster on West Coast time, and I know you got stuff to do today and performances and whatnot.
Now, I tell you what, I have dug ditches. This is a lot easier. This is not bad at all.
Guy I used to work for said, the only thing I like about our job is there's no heavy lifting, and I'm not working outdoors.
There you go. When you pick a field full of rocks and pick it clean in Southwest Missouri, everything else is gravy after that.
where are you going after today? After California, are you stopping back then at Prairie Home Companion, or what's going on?
Well, I'm headed back to North Carolina. I'm playing on a show on Tuesday. De La Fleck is coming to play his concerto for banjo and orchestra with the North Carolina Symphony, and Laura Lynn Dossett and I and Chris Brashear are playing, filling out some of the concerts, and that's during IBMA week. And then I've got a couple of IBMA things, and then I go back to Prairie Home on the 5th.
You know, I had read about, and I had Bela on, a couple months ago, before The Imposter came out, and I had read that you mentioned you were going to be there, and I forgot, and I should have said, let's talk about that a little more. I'm glad you remembered to mention
well,
that.
Bela's concerto is just, it's as you might expect, it's just high level music, and beautifully played, and beautifully written and orchestrated.
It really, I mean, here you think, here's a, we got one of our banjo players out there, leading the way, and it turns out that he really is maybe probably a genius, and he just keeps proving it. He goes to Africa and proves it, and he comes back and he does stuff with McCoy Tyner, and then, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's going to be such a neat show.
Yeah, well, he's the most nominated artist in Grammy history, the most nominations across
all the fields.
The different categories. I mean, so and he's a 15-time Grammy Award winner, as well. And a nice guy.
Great guy. He's a great guy. And I got a feeling he's going to get at least one more Grammy nod out of this, out of The Imposter. It's just a phenomenal.
I think so. Yeah. I really do.
Cool. Well, man, you're so all right. So you do that, and then You're going to Prairie Home, and then what, people, you have a website, right? I know because I've been to it, but just tell people where they can follow the antics of Joe Newberry.
They can follow me on Facebook if they want, because that's usually where I keep the most updated things. Mm-hmm. There's a Joe Newberry music site on Facebook, but okay. There's also just straight old Newberry Joe.
Okay.
Facebook.com/NewberryJoe, or they can go to Reverb Nation if they want to hear some sound samples. My JoeNewberry.com is it's up, but Lord, I think I had hair when that website was made.
It needs a little massaging. I was noticing the other day. I thought you could use a little bit of a massage on that one. Maybe update a little bit.
Well, you know, you always have to have something to work toward, and yeah. I think my website is worth it.
So of recordings that are out circulating that are relatively new, what's out there available that might be a nice snapshot of what you're doing right now?
The Compton and Newberry Live it was taken from a concert we did in 2012 in Delaware, Newark, Delaware, for the Brandywine Friends, and Big Medicine's last project was called Pine to Pine, or if you were on South Park, it's Pine to Pain. So we've got that now. And the other band that we haven't mentioned that is one of the highest musical honors of my whole life, when Jim Watson and Bill Hicks and Mike Craper left the Red Clay Ramblers in the mid-'80s, they didn't think, you know, they were going to play together. You know, they had their own things going. And of course, the Red Clay Ramblers have continued on and are one of the truly, and I'm not kidding, truly great American bands. They're a great band. But when Tommy Thompson passed away in the 2003, Jim and Mike and Bill decided that they wanted to play together again. And so they asked me to sit in the Tommy Thompson chair. So we go by because the Red Clay Ramblers are still a band out there working, we decided to just use our last names. And so it's Craver, Hicks, Watson, and Newberry, which sounds just like a law firm. So actually, that's what I call us. It's like, I have a show with the firm. but it is just like playing. If I were a baseball player, it would be like playing with my trading cards.
Wow.
They are, and it's one of my highest musical honors to play with them, because I mean they were guys on records to me.
Yeah,
you know, they're all about 10 years older than I am. They're like my big brothers. You know, and I went out there when I went out to North Carolina. I walked my first night in North Carolina. I went to a party way out in the country, and I walked in this shop where there was dancing, and I mean it's like I was like a wide eyed little country boy. Walked in, and I said, God, that guy fiddles just like Bill Hicks. And then, you know, like in the Warner Brothers cartoons where the character's eyes will go like, because it was Bill Hicks. And it's like, oh my God. And so over the years, like, I got to know all of those guys. And then when they start playing together again, they wanted to have banjo, and they asked me, and we've actually been playing about 10 years now. My first show with them, we played at the Carter Family Fold in Hilton, Virginia. It was the night that Johnny Cash wanted to come and play for June's People. June had been dead about a month.
Oh.
And so Jeanette, whom I loved, Jeanette said, Johnny wants to come play, so he's going to play for you. And so we said, okay, sounds good.
Just this once. Never again. We're not going to let this happen.
Oh,
again.
My God. It was one of the most amazing demonstrations of love and respect for John Cash, but also from him talking about June, because he was like, oh, God, I'm getting chills thinking about it. He'd sing a song, and he'd say, this one's for you, baby.
Oh, jeez.
He'd say, folks, my heart's broken. I've lost my mate.
Oh, geez.
You know, and he'd sing this song, you know, song after song. And then, like, he was sitting there, and somebody in the back, and the Carter Family Fold, I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's a big building. And then they had the side panels open. So people were sitting on the hillside. cars lined the Poor Valley. It lined the A.P. Carter Highway. And somebody yelled out, way in the back, "We love you, John!" And he stopped, and he looked back, and he said, "I love you, too."
Wow.
And it was an amazing thing. The thing that was really so startling and touching is that I hadn't seen a picture of him in a couple of years, and he was singing great. It was when he was doing all that work with Rick Rubin.
Yeah.
He's singing great, but he was so frail. And they brought him in, and then he played, and he had white hair, and just looked, he looked like a hole in the ends, what he looked like. And then when he was done, Jeanette said, please don't crowd him, let us get him out. And they got him off the stage, and he got in his car, and he drove away. And it was just, I mean, I'll never forget it.
Yeah. Those are those moments, Joe, that you just, you're in this field of music and being around it and singing it and watching it too. And you were there in all those capacities. And that was an amazing thing.
I saw The Art of Love playing that night. But.
That's a good term. That's a great term. Wow. Thanks for sharing that. Thanks so much for sharing that. And that's why I like people to come on and just, you know, people say, how long can we talk? I said, as long as you want. And I don't care. I don't really care what we talk about. You know, in this case, Joe, we talked about a lot of cartoons. I wanted to remind you that when you go pick up your awards, make sure you get an allusion to a cartoon that the whole audience will get.
I'll try to do that very thing. You know, maybe I'll take a little paper umbrella and hold it over my head like the Roadrunner, and it'll say,
"You're going to win some awards, all right." Now, after you win these awards coming up, would you promise to come back and we'll chat again sometime when you're not standing on the porch in the rain?
Yes, sir.
All right, cool. Joe Newberry.
I'd love to do that. Thank you.
This has been a blast. I mean, we're going to do this again, right? You're committing right now to the world that you'll come back on and we'll just chat.
I pledge to be my troth.
Okay. Joe Newberry, thanks a lot, man, for calling in. And best of luck. I know, I'm telling you, it's the decade of Joe Newberry. That's what we're on the cusp of right now, folks.
But rest assured, we will get to the stage four of the career. Who is Joe Newberry? So until then, I'll come on as often as you want.
Anytime, man, and right. Anytime you want to call in, if you're on the road, call me. It can be Joe from the road.
Just
call me, and I'll find a way to plug you in. I promise.
All right, thank you, brother.
All right, hey Joe, take it easy, bud.
See you. Bye.
That was fun. I knew it. I knew that was going to be fun. I knew it I kept thinking, I got to get Joe on. And he is. He's a remarkable guy. But I knew he was going to be just like that. I had never talked to him before. We'd just been trading messages for 2 or 3 weeks trying to set something up. And that was a lot of fun. He's going to win some awards, a lot of awards. The world is starting to find out about Joe Newberry, not just as a musician, but I bet you they find out through his songs about his poetry and all the other stuff that he does. And we're going to hear more and more about Joe. What a great guy. That was a blast.